come here to Juventus in our opening game of the Champions League and play like we did, second half was extraordinary. Extraordinary. And we've gone and got a decision like that there. It's absolutely extraordinary. We were magnificent, magnificent. Coming roaring in there against Juventus, who spent £100 million and we were fantastic.
Looks up. Perfect cross to the back post, and it's Thompson. Alan Thompson has fired Celtic ahead, as he did in Stuttgart earlier in the year.
2-0 to Celtic! Absolutely sensational! Plays it into Nakamura! Left side Nakamura! What a shot that is! Shot it again! Finishes it off! What a night at Celtic Park! That goal was simply majestic!
Is that actually small Guru across? Well, Guru left foot in corner in towards the far post. Header in! It's a goal for Celtic! Wanyama has put them in front! Three in the far post. His header was true. Precisely what Celtic need. Celtic 1, Barcelona 0.
Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. This is Harry Brady and this is podcast number 200D, part of the series we've been looking at the players who've graced the group stages or last 16 of the Champions League for the famous Glasgow Celtic. We've previously looked at the goalkeepers, defenders and midfielders, and this week I am joined by Hull Boy, where we review those people who have graced the hoops in perhaps the most important position, the goal-scoring role, putting the ball in the back of the net. Naturally, there's one man who stands head and shoulders above everybody else, so pretty much what Hull Boy and I do is discuss who could play alongside Henrik Larsson, narrow down to about four, and then discuss their merits. At the end of the day, the decision on who plays alongside Mr. Larsson and who plays in midfield, defence and in goals is down to you. So I'll tell you at the end how to vote, but you can do it by Twitter, email, on the site or on Kerrydale Street. This is me, Harry Brady, and this is him, Hull Boy. Okay, so after a sabbatical, I am joined by Hull Boy to discuss the strikers in the Champions League 11. How are you doing, Hull Boy?
I'm fine, thanks, Harry. How are you?
I am fantastic. And good. We've just been discussing this podcast will last about 2 minutes because the question is, we are picking the strikers, so who plays alongside Henrik Larsson? Unless we're picking a team with one up front and then it's Henrik Larsson.
Yeah. Well, everybody's got the envelope with the two names in, so it's, you know, if anybody differs from what we ultimately come up with, then
they're wrong. I will, for the benefit of having a bit of a debate about it, I will go through the players that you very kindly identified as starts for Celtic in the Champions League. They are in the striking position. They are Chris Sutton with 15. Henry, this is, sorry to keep talking over myself, this is prior to this season?
It is, yeah. It doesn't include this season's games.
It doesn't include this season's games. I am minded to say I'm not really sure that any discussion about the strikers of this season would have any merit in a Celtic Champions League 11. There you go. So it is Sutton with 15, Larsson with 12, Hartson with 13, Kamara with 4, Janino with 2, Jan Venegård of Hesling with 9, Zarafsky 4, Kenny Miller 5, Scott McDonald 10, Chris Killen 1, Georgios Samaras 10, Sheridan 1, Miku 2, and Gary Hooper 6.
Yeah, and what I would say, with us just having said it only includes players up to this season, it also only includes players who started Champions League games. So, notable omission out of that is Tony Watt from last season.
Yes, exactly. And also, it's relevant to stick in goals. We've mentioned Samaras a bit in the midfielders, and Samaras is clearly identified as a key player for Celtic in Champions League football. But if I then go through the goal scorers in Champions League group stages or last 16 football, we have Chris Sutton with 6, Henrik Larsson with 4, Alan Thompson 3, Kenny Miller 3, Samaras 3, Liam Miller 2, John Hartson 2, Venegård of Hesling 2, Nakamura 2, Janicek 2, Scott McDonald 2, McGeady and Hooper and Robson on 2, Gary Hooper 2, and then none of the others that we've got down as strikers. You've got Tony Watt, you just mentioned, but he never started a game with one goal, and Maloney was discussed in the midfielders in the last podcast. So adding to the conversation about who's going to be included in the team, you've got Chris Sutton actually outscored Henrik Larsson.
Yeah, which, okay, I mean, Sutton got 2 goals against Juventus, but apart from that, you know, he kind of, in those games he played, he was kind of fairly consistent player, and you know, I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, at that level, you know, you're playing against quality teams, but you're also playing against quality defenders. You know, and I think it's a testament to Sutton's own abilities and own Celtic career. You know, that against that top quality opposition, not only was he a regular player, but he also scored quite a number of goals.
Do you think that's down to our greater prowess at set pieces under Martin O'Neill?
Well, possibly. I mean, a lot of that is down to the kind of styles of the teams. And I think, well, regardless of Martin O'Neill, I mean, under Strachan, we were quite prolific in terms of set pieces rather than open play in terms of scoring goals. But obviously, Martin O'Neill he set his stall out in that way, and he, you know, the teams that he's managed subsequently to Celtic, opposition managers and players have always said, you know, then those teams are dangerous at set pieces, and Sutton certainly had all the attributes for him to be dangerous as a player from set pieces. I think the other thing is, you talked about the midfield in the last podcast, and you know, the kind of midfielders of the Martin O'Neill era and the way he set out the team, was that, you know, there was sufficient width in the midfield to actually get the ball into the box to the likes of Sutton and Larsson and Hartson to exploit that.
And Sutton got his goals. You said, I mean, one of them was two goals against Juventus, and I suppose the thing is Sutton had a slightly longer career than, because he was into the Strachan era, whereas Larsson was gone. But then So yeah. Larson's career was slightly more brief. And yeah. there was always the dilemma once Hartson was there of, do you play Larson and Hartson because they are going to get you more goals?
Yep.
Or do you play Larson and Sutton because that is a more aesthetically pleasing partnership?
Mm-hmm.
Who you felt was more of a partnership, whereas Larson and Hartson was perhaps two goal scorers who played alongside one another?
Yeah. I think the thing is as well, we saw those people interchanging and those players playing together regularly. So, I mean, it would be interesting, hypothetically, to kind of say, well, of the other forwards, which of those could have actually played alongside Larson and still made... Henry Larson would have been good in his own right, regardless. But I think Henrik would be the first to admit that his own play and his own position was strengthened by, the likes of Sutton and Hartson. Would that have been as prolific and have had such a great impact if it was any of the other forwards that we've seen in Champions League games? You know, I mean, you look at the likes of Scott McDonald and Kenny Miller and people like that, completely different players, really. Would they have been able to play with Larson? Probably not.
And would they
have been able to play with Sutton and Hartson prolifically? It's a moot point, really.
I suppose that's possibly one of the things. If you then look through the players, if you were to go on the assumption of you're going to pick Henrik Larsson,
yeah,
and who would be better to play alongside Henrik Larsson, you've got Henri Camara.
Yeah.
Who I can't believe he played started four Champions League games, because I would be struggling to tell you that he played more than about 10 games for Celtic in total. It's just a blank, his career, Celtic career, for me.
Yeah, exactly. but I think what happened was that he was funnily enough, I always remember Martin O'Neill making some comment about Camara that he was actually... He got quite a lot of criticism, but he was going along quite well domestically, and then he picked up an injury, and he just never looked the same player after that.
Yeah.
And I think in that period, he had started Champions League games.
And then if you then go down to, if you look at, I suppose there's two different types of players. There is the player who likes the ball played into feet.
Yeah.
The smaller player, and then there's the bigger player. So you're looking at whether Larson would have been able to play alongside Zarafsky, Kenny Miller, Kamara, Giannino, Miku,
yep.
Scott McDonald.
Mm-hmm. But the interesting one for me is what would have been a Jan Venegar of Hesselink and Henrik Larson partnership look like?
Well, that's for me the two.
Big Jan was the nearest thing to a Hartson and a Sutton, really.
Yes.
And so you can't put Samaras into that kind of category, because Samaras isn't, well, it's a strange one, Samaras, because ironically in Europe he's been a target man, but not a target man down the middle.
Yes.
Target man out wide.
And what I was going to say is, for me, the three players who... I mean, I think Henry Larson could have played alongside anybody, because that's what he could have
absolutely
done. But for me, the three players that would be interesting to consider outside the Sutton-Hartson two, who we saw directly interacting with Larson, the three players that you might consider whether they could or couldn't, or how they would have played alongside Larson, would be Venegar of Hesselink, Samaras, and Hooper.
Yeah, Hooper's there for me, and I would interchange that as well, and I would say, could those three players have played alongside Hartson and Sutton? It's interesting because for me, I think a really interesting strike partnership would have been Sutton and Hooper.
Yes, I think Sutton is a difficult one. Sutton needs a, for Sutton to be effective, you needed to stick him right beside a goal scorer.
Yeah.
So he was very successful playing alongside Shearer.
Yeah.
Was the main man at Chelsea and wasn't successful, yeah. And then came to Celtic and played alongside Henrik Larsson, and then for a period played alongside John Hartson.
Absolutely, but what you also find as well is that Sutton is a good reader of a partner's game, and obviously so was Henrik, and so was John Hartson, but equally, well, maybe not equally, but Gary Hooper is a good reader of a straight partner's game. And I think, you know, they talk about this kind of telepathic, presence between two strikers. But what it is it's about being clever as a footballer and being aware of what your partner is doing.
Yes.
And I think that is an attribute that Gary Hooper's got.
So, yeah, and I'm not specifically... I'm using this to illustrate Gary Hooper rather than talking about it. After our last couple of games, I've been commenting that part of our problem is someone like Anthony Stokes is now our number one striker. And I'm not having a go at Anthony Stokes. It's more, I think Anthony Stokes needs to play up front with someone who's a better striker than him for Anthony Stokes to succeed.
Yeah, I'd go along with that, yeah.
And so Gary Hooper was a better striker than Anthony Stokes. Therefore, Stokes fed off him and his passes to Hooper were good. But his passes to Hooper were good because Hooper could understand how Stokes played. And so Hooper could work off Stokes.
Yeah, I think as well, though, you mentioned the word better. I think it's about being cleverer. It's about being a clever footballer. Hooper's a clever footballer, in the same way that Sutton, Larsson, Hartson, I would they would be in the clever footballer category.
Yeah.
Because they instinctively know what to do. I mean, they've got ability, but they instinctively know what to do in certain situations, and that includes bringing other teammates into the game.
Where would you put Samaras in that?
It's just so difficult because, I mean, you've gone through this chronologically in terms of picking your defenders and your midfielders. So you're then thinking, well, actually, could Samaras operate in a two-striker situation? With the other players on board, and it's just so enigmatic. I think to a certain extent, what we're seeing now in Champions League football, and sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't, is that there is a tactical approach that is being built around Samaras.
Yeah,
but that actually. It kind of negates some of the other things that a combined Celtic team could do. You know, play the ball in a different, play the game in a different way. So, you know, at its crudest level, it's led to a long ball game where, you know, Samaras is expected to win that ball, draw two or three opposition players into him, and hope that. You know, he wins the ball and it goes on to somebody who can exploit some of the space.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting for me prior to the Ajax game, and I know this is talking about this season, but it's talking about that point you're making. Frank de Boer interviewed before the first game, saying Celtic have two tactics, and that is to try and play the ball out from the back, and if they get into difficulty, play the ball to Samaras.
Yeah.
If we are that predictable, then you get the situation of the most recent Ajax game in Amsterdam, where in the first 20 minutes, every time Samaras got the ball, there was three or four Ajax players around him.
Yep.
If he's not on his game or 100% fit, that's you stuffed.
Yeah.
Because you lose the ball every time it goes to him.
Yeah.
Because he either has the ability to get past three or four guys closing him down,
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, you've lost it.
But not only that, what you do is you actually, if that in that scenario, you lose the ball out wide, and what you have is, which is a bit of a criticism that people have made, is that ball as soon as it's won by the opposition, inevitably it's going to start down their right,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to start with a Celtic player who defensively has just lost the ball high up the park and can't get back to support his left back.
Yep.
And that's why we've seen Izaguirre exposed on occasion. Whereas in times past, let's not kid ourselves, we did play a long ball game as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're punting the long ball up to, let's say, John Hartson in a Champions League game, John Hartson is in a central position.
Yeah.
And even if he doesn't win that ball, once the opposition mop that up, they're starting from a more central defensive position, and so the rest of the Celtic midfield can regain their shape pretty quickly. But as we all know, you can't play Samaras as a central striker. He's just so deficient in that respect.
But how would you think he would be if he was playing alongside someone like Larsson?
As a central striker?
Or as a one-off the striker?
Yeah.
So rather than wide left, in a bit?
Mm-hmm. No, I can't see it.
And not playing in a team with two midfielders on the park?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Again, I think the thing with Samaras, and it's another issue that he's raised, it's about his decision making. So even if he was playing in a partnership with Larsson, you know, what's the probability of kind of pass completions or movements between him and Larsson being as high as they would with, say, Sutton and Larsson or Hartson and Larsson?
One thing that Samaras is good at in European football a lot of the time is getting the ball up the park and getting a foul and moving the whole team up the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, I always felt our draw at home to Benfica last season was in part down to Samaras not playing. And then we weren't getting the ball up the park, we weren't stopping play, we weren't restarting play 20, 30 yards further up the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is also something that Sutton brought into it.
Exactly. Both Sutton and Larsson did that. And Hartson as well. I mean, you know, I think we sometimes forget, you know, Hartson was a superb back-to-goal striker.
Yeah.
Receiving the ball in and holding it up. And what that did was it did two things. It allows Celtic players to support him and move forward. But it means ultimately that we hold on to possession higher up the park for that little bit longer.
So if, from what we are talking about, we sort of pretty much ruled out, most of the people who play Champions League football up front for Celtic.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you want to go through some of that list, you know, Janinho was poor.
Yeah.
One of the games was against Barcelona.
He came on as a sub at Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, the game against Barcelona at Celtic Park, I mean, okay, ultimately we lost that, but he'd been completely ineffective. And I always remember because Sutton came on in his place for the second half and immediately kind of transformed the way in which we played. And actually, we got an equaliser, and you just felt that something might happen. As it turns out, it didn't. But we were just far more dynamic, but you know, it just didn't work out for Janino. You can discount people like Kenny Miller. You know, okay, he's got, what did he get, 3 goals or something like that? Two of them against Benfica, which was a very good win. Mm-hmm. It was a very good win. But, you know, not sufficiently good enough, really, at that level. And then you've got people like Miku. Funnily enough, Miku, I thought he played well against Barcelona.
Yeah.
And he showed more. He showed a bit more in that game about his qualities compared with the kind of, you know, it's obvious that he couldn't get to grips with, you know, some of the hackers and cloggers in SPL football. But I thought he played pretty well that night. And then I think there's a kind of category of Big Jan, Scott McDonald, who actually, you probably won't forget them in terms of their Champions League contribution because of the sheer excitement of the goals that they scored in the games that they played. You know, okay, Scott McDonald, he became an infuriating player at Celtic, really.
There's similarities for me between Scott McDonald and Anthony Stokes.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them being the infuriating bit of, they always look completely peed off with their colleagues.
Yeah, yeah.
And whenever they make a wrong choice, they always apologise in a fashion as if, oh, I didn't know there was anybody else in the box. when I tried my shot from the most ridiculous angle, oh, I didn't see you there. Yes, you did.
I think that's they're taught that at football academies these days. There's a special class on that for strikers.
They get a mirror in front of them. It's like shadow boxing. Practice apologising to your teammates because you didn't realise that they had a golden opportunity to score an open goal, and you had four defenders between you, but you still took the shot.
Yeah. And they obviously think that we're daft enough in the crowd to actually think, oh, we can let Anthony and Scott off with those.
Yeah, they just didn't see that guy.
They genuinely didn't see him.
Yes, exactly. They didn't see the midfielder making the lung-busting run right the way through the middle. No, they didn't see that.
He's done the professional hand of apology. Yes. So we're all convinced now.
Yes, the slopey shouldered, hand up.
Yeah.
Really sorry. Yeah, so
I mean, I wouldn't, you know, you couldn't entertain those when you've got some of the other players in the list. You couldn't entertain them being in the kind of the front two. But I have to say, in terms of the goals that they scored, the excitement that they actually provided when they got those goals was tremendous. You know,
and to some extent, their ability. This isn't a criticism. Some of those players like Scott McDonald, Kenny Miller. They are patently not of the same ability as Chris Sutton, Henrik Larsson, John Hartson. Their ability to therefore perform and score goals in Champions League football is a great credit to them.
Absolutely.
That at a time when we had Larsson, Sutton, Hartson, we didn't get to the last 16 Champions League, but we did with Scott McDonald.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think if you actually look at if you look at that last 16 appearance that season against Milan, you know, okay, we took them to extra time, but you never really felt as though Celtic were going to hurt them badly.
No.
During those games, I know there was obvious incidents like the penalty incident, wasn't there? Maldini
with a brilliant save. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it was going to be an incident like that. I felt that would win us the game. And you know, I mean, who did we? I mean, we brought Craig Beattie on, didn't we? In extra time in Milan, you know. And I think at that time that kind of said a lot about the strike force that we had. I know there are comments at the moment about the quality of our strikers, but It is remarkable that we did get to the last 16 with some of that squad, really. They did, you know, and as I say, those individual strikers, you know, they provided memorable moments at that time.
You mentioned Miku there. I mean, I always felt sorry for Miku in that, you're right, against Barcelona he performed well, and I just got the impression that by this time last year, Lennon had decided it would be too much hard work to convert Miku into being a player who could perform in the SPL when he was going at the end of the season anyway. Because he had that fantastic performance away in Inverness and then never played a game again.
And I think we'll see that. I think that to me is, I'm getting slightly off the point, but that to me is the era that we're in now, where, you know, the scouting system is one where we have to kind of find these players, and dare I say, take a chance. You know, okay, you're taking a chance on any player that you sign as to whether they kind of fit into the system, fit into the culture of what Celtic are trying to do at any given point. But there'll be a few more Mikos down the line.
Yeah. So from what we are seeing, Hooper might have a look in.
Yeah.
But pretty much it would be between Hartson and Sutton to pass partner Larson.
Yeah, and I mean, let's face it, all of this is subjective, but for me, Hooper was, you know, I'd been watching Hooper for quite a while before he came to Celtic in games that he was playing. For Scunthorpe, that, you know, were featured, and obviously locally in the media, he was getting some good reviews. And, you know, I always remember saying, you know, keep your eye on this lad because he's got something about him. So to a certain extent, when he did sign for Celtic, I was a little bit biased, and maybe always looked at him in a positive light. But I think there's certain qualities that he's got that, as I said earlier, that he can play alongside other players who are of good quality, but I also think that he's got the attributes to make players who are, you know, maybe not as good, he can make them look better at times. I think Stokes, I know Stokes has played well this season without Hooper at times, but I think Hooper made Stokes, you know, good at that level.
That's what I think. I think we underestimate how much Hooper made Stokes look a good player.
And I mean, okay, this isn't about Hooper now and where he is, but I mean, I watched a bit of the Norwich game, and you could see as the game went on, and at the weekend, Norwich were getting more and more confident, but Hooper, you could see some of his touches. He's a very good player.
So if we do that, there is one player that we've not discussed.
Magic Zarafsky.
Even more important than Magic Zarafsky. Discuss Magic Zarafsky first before one even more important player. And because we've not discussed Henrik Larsson. Magic Zarafsky was an odd one. He was one of these players who, when we first came into the team, he'd a couple of games and there was just nothing, you know, he wasn't there. And then I remember going to see Celtic play Dunfermline and at East End Park, and suddenly he looked a player, and coming back and saying, this reminds me of, I always remember coming back from Celtic had played St Johnstone. If you remember, John Hartson played 6 or 7 games without scoring a goal. We went up to St Johnstone, I think we won 2-0, but Hartson missed an open goal from about 5 yards. I'm coming back and saying to my pal, do you know what? I don't know if Hartson's going to make it for us. For whatever reason, I thought he would score a bar load, and if he can't score after 6 or 7 games, or whatever it was. And then the next game, suddenly, that was it. And Zarabsky, we the game against him for him, and we're coming back saying, maybe this guy will do something, he had some touches and blah, blah, blah. And then seemed to be coming into a player and then disappeared again.
Yeah.
So similar to the sort of Bobby Petter profile in a more condensed period. Not the player, becomes the player, and then just disappears off the face of the earth.
Yeah, it's a strange one with Zarabsky. I mean, I think, you know, it's that... That 2005-06 season is just a season full of contradictions. So, and I think everybody was so deflated by the what happened with Art Media.
Yeah.
And I think he actually made his debut in that in the away game, didn't he?
I think he did. Yeah.
So.
I think it was a difficult for a lot of players. That was a difficult transition for the team.
Yeah.
And obviously the new manager and, you know, certain fans, I don't think... I remember one of the first ever pieces written on the Celtic Underground site referred to Strachan as dead manager walking by Neil. And the principle behind it was, because there are so many people who, when he performs well, will just accept that he's doing okay.
Yeah.
But as soon as he's not performing well, we'll turn against him. And so you had all of those things, the first game not being great. It was a difficult period for players to come into.
Yeah. I think the other thing for me as well is there are some players who come along, you know, and they've got to acclimatise to living and working in Scotland and get used to the size of Celtic. And you can see how some players just kind of, they step up to that and they grow into it. Or in some cases, it kind of rubs off them on day one. And I never kind of felt that with Zarabsky. He obviously had certain qualities, and he was a very, very good finisher on his day. But I always kind of got the impression that the club was far too big for him. And that kind of weight of expectation that was on him. He never really rose to that challenge.
No, and I never... You just get a sense with some players that they're never going to be at Celtic for long.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but even having said that, I mean, if you look at two examples, not strikers, but if you look at two examples over the last two or three seasons, you've got Victor Wanyama, who's now gone, and you've got Virgil van Dijk, and you kind of think, well, actually, I don't think we're going to be lucky to keep hold of van Dijk for any length of time, but the period that they're here, they actually get Celtic,
yes,
they grow into the role, and I'm not saying they're egotistical in any way, but there's obviously something in their characteristic where they can take all of that expectation on their shoulders. You know, and they're real footballers in that sense. And, you know, I never felt that was the case with Zarabsky. I never really felt that was the case with Janino, who was an even more high-profile player in that respect.
Yeah.
There's probably one or two others like that that have tried to fit the bill. Henri Camara, I mean, Camara said, you know, he kind of said a lot of positive things, but again, I don't think he didn't really have all the attributes that were needed.
Yeah. So, on to, and we don't really need to talk about him that much, but on to Henrik Larsson, who's the player that we've all got on the team sheet from day one.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can't see anybody who would be sitting and listening to this podcast who wouldn't have Larsson in any configuration of any Celtic team that was going to be picked. I mean, you know, you could look at Celtic's greatest 11 of all time, you know, ignore Champions League, ignore certain domestic competitions, etc., etc. I mean, Larsson would be on the team sheet. You know, he's you know, it's, I think we forget sometimes what a privilege it was to be able to see, you know, for such a long period, a true Celtic legend.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I don't know if you've ever been in this, you're in a sort of a group of people who correspond, email sort of correspondence, and some of them you know better than others or less well than others.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being in a sort of group who was a friend, and he would email a group of his other footballing supporting friends. And one of them was, two of them were supporters of Scottish clubs, but they'd moved down to England and were quite dismissive that Scottish football was crap. I'm sure you'll have met them, you know, that sort of, notionally they were Airdrie fans and a Hearts fan, but Scottish football's rubbish and can't really believe that you watch it every week type of attitude. And I remember they were having a debate about strikers in Europe, who was the best striker in Europe. And they were having this debate, and I was involved in it, and I fired in an email saying, Henrik Larsson, be about 2001, 2002.
Oh, right, yeah.
Henrik Larsson. And they were, the two of them sent back saying that that was ridiculous. OK, he's goal for Celtic, but he's hardly a European class.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I wouldn't swap Henrik Larsson for any other striker in Europe.
Yeah. No.
To which I always remember one of them coming back saying, what, so you wouldn't swap him for Batistuta? And I said, no, there's not a striker in Europe that you could give me. If somebody came along and offered me a player swap for Henrik Larsson,
yeah,
there is not a striker in Europe that I wouldn't say I needed money as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very dismissive until I remember sending them an email when Henrik Larsson came on for Barcelona and transformed the European Cup final against Arsenal.
Yep.
And I said, whenever it was, 7, 8 years ago, you dismissed me about Henrik Larsson.
Yeah.
That was when he was at his peak. He's just turned a Champions League final when he's passed it.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's absolutely nailed it, really, because obviously being down here, I had probably had more of those kinds of conversation. In actual fact, there's a pal of mine who's a Liverpool supporter, and he does have a good appreciation of football outside of England, you know, both European football, and takes a little bit of interest in Scottish football. And he was the only person throughout that period who would, you know, he would regularly ask about Henrik Larsson, but he would also acknowledge Larsson from, you know, the times that he either used to see him playing in Europe or for Sweden. Because you've got to remember that even while he was at Celtic, Henrik Larsson was putting in kind of pretty good performances for Sweden, and was an integral part of a good Sweden international side.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just annoying that it took that Champions League final for it to be switched around in terms of people's thinking about how good a player Larsson was.
It was just fantastic. And I suppose part of the problem for all of these people that we've discussed, excluding Sutton and Hartson, the people who followed Larsson, it's a bit like Larry Holmes followed Muhammad Ali. Doesn't matter how good Larry Holmes was, he wasn't as good as Muhammad Ali.
No. Again, that's a good example. And I think the other thing for me as well is, you know, we've kind of restricted this by our own definitions to Champions League performances, and Henrik's were up there and they were good. But I think what that does is, because that has its limitations, it disguises what Henrik was doing in other European competitions,
yeah,
in other seasons. So, you know, I mean, we're not here to talk about the Seville season too much, but if anybody down in England needed any examples of just how good Henrik Larsson was, then they should have seen it in that season against what they would have regarded as being decent opposition.
I mean, it was his ability at 5'9" to score so many goals with his head.
Absolutely.
To sort of hang in the air.
Mm-hmm.
To just use that fraction of speed just to pull away from a defender at the last second.
Yep.
And the most remarkable thing was that he played for Celtic for 7 years.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, again, that's one of the good things that kind of came out of just looking at some of the stats of who'd actually contributed to Champions League games. You know, and as I said, we all remember the great Seville run, and you would think, oh, yeah, well, that would really be the dominant factor of Henrik Larsson's European career. But, you know, there's only Chris Sutton who played more games as a striker. In actual fact, technically, Sutton played some of those Champions League games as a midfielder.
As a midfielder, yeah.
So, I mean, only John Hartson, in that sense, played more Champions League games as a striker. Played one more than Henrik.
And I know it's easy, you know, you can easily think about things. And if you think about when he came, 1997 to 2004... we were only a Champions League team from 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't there. And I often go on about, and it's the reason for picking Champions League, because you can't pick players from a year. I can never tell you how good Jimmy McGrory was. The fact that he scored a goal a game and that 5'9" was considered a fantastic header of the ball like Larsson indicates. Yeah. So I'll never know. But what I can do is see what I've seen with my own eyes.
Yeah.
And if you were to ask me to put down a Celtic team that I saw with my own eyes, so that's in 39 years of going to the games, there's only three people that I wouldn't... There's four people I wouldn't hesitate on putting their names on the team sheet. And that is Arthur Boric, Danny McGrain, Paul McStay and Henrik Larsson.
Yeah, well, it was admirable far, really, yeah. It's interesting that you include Boric in that, but, yeah.
But he's by far the best goalkeeper I've seen playing for Celtic.
Yeah. Boric is a good keeper, but I think we've got a very good goalie at the moment, so...
We do, and I think he's got one deficiency, but... But anyway, it was more the fact that other players you could have a long debate about. You mean in terms of strikers playing for Celtic in the 39 years that I've seen him, Kenny Dalglish, I suppose, but he was. I only saw him for a couple of years, and I was very young.
Yep.
But you've then got McAvaney, George Cadet, Chris Sutton, John Hartson, Andy Walker, Paolo Di Canio. You've got, as I say, Dalglish, Charlie Nicholas. You've got a raft of players that you could put in. I would absolutely pick Henrik Larsson first.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. As I said earlier, we've limited this ourselves by just picking Champions League, and I think it would take us a lot longer, but it would actually be quite interesting to pick the best 11 who played in European competitions, including the old style European Cup, because
yeah.
I think actually you would have a much bigger task on your hands.
In
terms of the forwards, if you think about, you've obviously mentioned Kenny Dalglish, but you would then have players from the 60s,
yeah, Bobby Lennox,
70s, yeah, absolutely. Who you would bring in, and you would actually, I think you would create a much harder task for yourself. Whether that would actually kind of threaten Henrik's name on the team sheet, not too sure, but it certainly would threaten any of the other strikers that we've been discussing in this podcast. You know, and that includes Chris Sutton, John Hartson,
Well, we'll leave people to... That's us done slightly more than I was thinking we'd be able to stretch out the striker, since the answer was Henrik Larsson plus another. We'll leave for people to decide who they stick up alongside Henrik Larsson. And I think you and I are planning to have another podcast rattled out of the door in time for the AGM.
Yep. I think that's right. I mean, there's been an awful lot going on over the last couple of weeks, and we've got to build up to the AGM. There's some interesting resolutions that are being put forward, and some interesting responses that have been made by the board. And I think, you know, I think it's I know these things have been discussed on the forums and elsewhere, but it's going to make for an interesting AGM, I think.
Yeah, I think it will. It's suffice then for me to say, we will. If people want to choose their Champions League 11, you can go back and listen to the previous podcasts. Put through your 11. We've already had quite a number of votes in. You can tweet, you can email harrybradycu@gmail.com. We will finalise things. We will then put it up on the site in a 1 through 11. And we will have podcasts soon from Hull Boy and others. So thanks for joining me. And we'll see what the votes are. See if everybody votes in Samaras.
I know a certain former editor of the Celtic Underground will be trying to make a good case, but I don't think it's going to actually work.
No. Anyway, thanks, old boy. Cheers.
Cheers, I've Harry.
Bye.
Loving you too long to stop now.
I hope you enjoyed Hull Boy and I's discussion about the Celtic strikers. Obviously, there's no doubt that number one is Henrik Larsson. Well, maybe there is a doubt. Maybe somebody's sitting there screaming, saying, no, 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 it's Sutton and Hartson or Hooper or somebody. But anyway, I think most of us agree that it will be Henrik and another up front. If you want to vote, many already have. You can listen to the podcast. 200A was the goalkeepers, 200B was the defenders, 200C the midfielders, and this one, 200D the strikers. You can leave a comment on the site. You can email harrybradycu@gmail.com. You can put a comment on the Kerrydale Street links. You can tweet me at harrybradycu. You'll find me on Twitter. You can also find Hullboy on Twitter. At Hullboy, that's Hullboy, the son of Hull. So Hullboy and I will be having another podcast. You wait for ages and one, two, three come along at once. We'll be having another podcast pre-AGM discussing things such as the living wage resolution and the resolution on the granting of an SFA licence to Rangers. And we'll also be having a post-AGM podcast to discuss that, but it's also not just about business. We'll also be discussing the team's performance in Champions League domestically and all that jazz. Thanks very much once again for downloading and listening to this podcast. You're listening to Otis Redding. I'm Harry Brady, and next up is Rod Stewart.
I was a kid at school. I messed around with all the rules. Apologized then, realized I'm not different after all. Me and the boys thought we had it sussed. Valentino's all of us. My dad said we look ridiculous. But boy, we broke some hearts. In and out of jobs, running free, waging war with society. Dumb blank faces stare back at me, but nothing ever changed. Promises made in the heat of the night, creeping home before it got too light. I wasted all that precious time and blamed it on the wine. I was only joking, my dear, looking for a way to hide my fear. What kind rejected lovers like butterflies, illusions of that grand first prize are slowly wearing thin. Susie, baby, you were good to me, giving love unselfishly, but you took it all too seriously. I guess it had to end. For the whole damn world to see. Quietly now, while I turn a page, Act One is over without costume change. The principal would like to leave the stage. The crowd don't understand.